on May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, listener. Are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, home of the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you. I'm somewhere on the I-10 in the higher desert of New Mexico. I'm at a gas station right now. I'm just driving. I wanted to let you know, the cops came to my house yesterday morning. And they said, hey, your dogs are outside chasing people on bikes. I told them, my dogs don't even own bikes. Thank you.
My dogs don't own bikes either. I like that one. Duff coming through in the middle of rehearsals for Guns N' Roses, giving us a great joke every week here only on Talk is Jericho. We love Duff. Keep him coming, man. We love the jokes. We love Guns N' Roses. We love the fact they're getting ready for their summer tour and a headlining appearance at the Download Festival. And Fozzy getting ready to appear again. Judas Rising tour starts up again in August in the States, but we got a lot of stuff going on in July also in the States, and we're going all across Europe. We got Rock USA in Oshkosh on July 12th. July 13th, the Cadott Rock Fest in Cadott, Wisconsin. 14th, Peoria. 15th, Belvedere. And then from the 26th of July, we do the Pheasant Festival in Hungary. Prague in the Czech Republic, Rock of Ages in Germany, Zurich at Work 21, Rock Planet at Pinella di Servia, Italy, Slovenia, Wacken, Berlin, Bochum, Aschaffenburg, Spain, Alcatraz, Bloodstock. Get all those gig information, all the show information, all the ticket information, all the VIP information at FozzyRock.com. And don't forget, Friday night, tomorrow, or tonight, if you're listening to this Friday morning, we will be in Winnemucca, Nevada at the Burning Cycle Festival. I believe it is just outside of Reno. Lots of great stuff coming up. And then, of course, the Judas Rising Tour with Adelita's Way, Stone Broken, and The Stir. That starts August 24th in Atlanta, Georgia. And then we're going all across the United States. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information. And speaking of information, all right, I got the man who claims he invented Talk and Shop. That's right, Rocky Romero, the same guy who wrote and recorded that hilarious diss track that you probably heard on Talk and Shop Sober in New York City. Rocky Romero makes his Talk as Jericho debut, and you better believe we're going to talk about the diss track and hear the story about the original Talk and Shop with Rocky Romero. Rocky's also been with New Japan Pro Wrestling for most of his career. He's got 8 tag team championships, and now he's working in the office there as well. He's helping New Japan go global, starting with the expansion right here in the States. We're going to get into all of that. He also trained at the New Japan Dojo in Los Angeles with Finn Balor and Carl Anderson. That's where they met. And Carl actually lived at Rocky's house with Rocky and his mom. Another great story. So let's get to it. Rocky Romero coming up here on Talk is Jericho.
Yo, you think it was bad when Macho Tears Hope? Well, you ain't seen nothing, brother. Carl Anderson, Luke Swallows. Why to jump the verbal shots of your fight? Blah, blah.
Okay, so here in the Tokyo Dome Hotel and with Rocky Romero, who's not only wrestling in New Japan, but you're kind of like in the office. You're a guy that's, I don't know if it's the
we shouldn't be telling this. Now everybody's going to be hitting me up on Twitter asking me for a job.
I don't know if it's really office though, is it? Because I was the same way when I was in WAR,
right?
Kind of almost the liaison for the Gaijin, for the boys, foreigners, for the boys. Because as you know, sometimes there's a lot of things that get lost in translation, and things get really screwed up right. Really quickly.
I'm getting gray hairs faster than I ever have this last year when they started giving me a bit of responsibility and kind of It's mostly like scheduling help, you know, because we're working with Ring of Honor. We have guys that work, you know, Ring of Honor or in Europe for Rev Pro in UK. So they have me just kind of making sure that everybody is cool schedule wise. Ring of Honor doesn't have certain problems with certain things. And that's kind of where my responsibilities are, making sure that everybody's got their passports ready and their visas and all that. Just checking in because my boss, who's Tiger Hattori, has been doing this for 30, 40 years. And so he's a little older. So I try to just support him, and because his plate is always full and he's always dealing with all kinds of other problems. So I try to take some of the stress off him.
Well, we also, it's funny too, because we love Tiger and we've known him for 20 odd years, but it's like, God bless him, man. He's been doing this for 40 years. He lives in New York City. His English is the shit.
What's wrong with you, man?
You live in New York City. You're like, he's like Funaki. Funaki is living in Texas for 20 years and still claims he can't speak English. I'm like, enough of this bullshit already. But it really is true. Yeah. Like, I felt bad because as we were putting together this deal for me to do this match with Kenny at the Tokyo Dome, a lot of little details. And like, I'm texting you, not as you, but as the office kind of leads. Like, look, Rocky, this is stupid. This is bullshit. What is going on? You're probably thinking, oh my God, it's Jericho's texting me again.
Yeah, but then, you know, I mean, it's tough because I get your side of it, you know, and things, every company works a little bit differently, right? But because of that, such things are lost in translation all the time. And, I'm going through like three or four different people, you know, three or four different levels just to get to the, you know, one message. Mm-hmm. So things get lost. I try, you know, I'm talking to one person, I'm talking to Tiger, I'm talking to another guy in the office who helped out with this deal. And, it's just madness. And sometimes they're not conveying what they actually need from you. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to tell me what, you know, it's like, it's just a mess. And it, like, yeah.
How did you get this, start getting this trust in this position?
I think that I've been here. The first time I came here was in 2002.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So I didn't realize you'd been coming here that long.
Yeah. So it was on my 20th birthday. I was 19. I turned 20 here. It was, my first trip ever was with, American Dragon, Dan O'Brien, Ricky Reyes, TJ Perkins, and another guy named Jack the Bull, whatever his name was. Mm-hmm. And
was your name always Rocky Romero?
Always Rocky Romero, yeah. And so the first time I came here, you know, I was a kid. You know, I trained in the LA Dojo for about 10 months with Samoa Joe and the rest of these guys. And the booker came, who was Uai at that time. He came down and, we'd just been training our asses off, just getting our asses handed to us every single day because we weren't even really doing like pro wrestling training. We were doing like shoot training and just doing jiu-jitsu and getting punched in the face. And like Inoki would come in and stretch the fuck out of us, you know, and put us on all kinds of wacky holds that hurt really bad. and then finally we got this opportunity to come over here, and it was for like 30 days. So this was like really the first time I'm really leaving home, you know, especially for this amount of time.
It's funny, that's how old I was, my first Japanese tour.
Really?
20, yeah.
Really? Yeah. And it's wild, right? I mean, it's a whole nother world. You know,
you don't know anything. I remember, and I want you to continue your story, but I remember like the first time you go to a drinking bar, they call them, they're the hostesses.
Right.
And it's a bunch of pretty girls, Filipino girls, Japanese girls. I didn't know that they were paid to be there. I didn't know their job was to flirt with you. And I was like, I'm walking out. I got like eight chicks. It's going to be like a giant orgy. And then not only did they all disappear at the end of the night, but they stuck me with the bill for about 80,000 yen or whatever it was.
Oh, well, thank
but
God.
You don't know, right?
Right. No, but you know what? It's so funny because nobody told us how much we were getting paid or what we were getting.
Really?
We knew nothing, right? We were just like, you know, we had just been training for 10 months and we're like, dude, we're finally in Japan. We're here, New Japan. We've made it. This is it, you know? So right when we got off the plane, they handed us an envelope for like $3,000, you know, because we're here for 30 days. And we're like, oh, dude, this is our money. Okay, cool. You know, so all of us are being like for the first 3 weeks are not spending anything, right? And then like before the last week, somebody told us, so how do you guys want to get paid? And we're like, wait, what? They're like, oh, should we send it to you? Do you want it cash? And we're like, well, you guys already paid us. And they're like, no. That money, that's per diem. And we're like, what? Per diem, per diem. And they're like, yeah. I was like, but this is $100 a day for per diem. They're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, geez. So then I went and bought a Japanese DVD player, and I went down to all the like wrestling stores and bought all these like sweet Japanese DVDs that I wanted to buy, but it was like $200 for like a Tiger Mask, you know, like set and all this stuff.
That's
you know,
pretty high class. You guys got per diem.
It was awesome. It was awesome. So yeah, it was just like, you know, you just don't know, you know, and we were staying, you know, here at the Tokyo Dome, super nice, you know, and it was cool, man. And what an experience.
Were you working like as a junior heavyweight with other Japanese guys too?
Yes. So our first match was actually for, so Fujinami was the president at that time, and he had this like side group called Muga, which was like supposed
what now?
Muga. And it was supposed to be like 70s, you know, style wrestling, real slow, hold the hold type thing.
Lots of technical moves.
Real technical, yeah. And, you know, nobody told us that, though. So we just thought it was a New Japan show, but they're like, oh, it's, you know, whatever. So we just didn't, you know, we went out and did our thing, which was, I guess, you know, kind of against what they wanted, probably. We did a bunch of high spots and shit. But our actual first New Japan match was in the Tokyo Dome. We opened it up against Kakihara, Jushin Thunder Liger, and Tiger Mask.
Who was with you?
Dan Bryan,
okay.
Ricky Reyes, and then TJ was our second, because like, gotcha. He was only like 16 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Or 17 or something. So, so they didn't. They thought that he was a bit too young to actually wrestle, you know, in the dome or whatever. So they just had him come out with us. And,
so your first time is 2002, and here we are in 2017.
Right.
So have you been a regular at all that time? Because I'm sure you've wrestled a lot of places, but from what I know, Rocky Romero to me is a New Japan pretty much exclusive guy.
Right. Yeah. No, I've been here probably for most of my career. You know, I was kind of in and out in the beginning, and then finally they gave me the Black Tiger gimmick. And I became.
Oh, no
yeah.
kidding! I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
like Black Tiger 2?
4.
4?
So yeah. So
okay, Mark Rocco,
Eddie's 2. Silver Kings 3.
Was he really?
And then yeah, I was fourth after.
I didn't
after
know him. That.
Yeah, so they have Tiger Mask 4. So his big idea, and I think Liger was the booker at the time, was to create a new Black Tiger, and Tiger Mask had really liked me over the late years, you know, and so he suggested, well, why not Rocky, you know? And they gave me like the character that Tiger Mask 4 is trained by Sayama, so they said, okay, well. Can you pretend that you're English and that Rocco trained you? And I was like, I'll f***ing do anything. This is a huge opportunity.
Sounds good, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So I had this like terrible English accent that I was doing for like the first, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And then I was just like,
funny. So the 4 Black Tigers, you had an Englishman and 3 Mexicans.
Right. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Basically.
Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican,
2 Mexicans. Right. Yeah.
But yeah. So, but then after that, I had a little trouble with the LA office. So then I moved over to NOAH for a bit. So NOAH was doing really good business at the time. They're a complete rival to New Japan. So I thought I would say, you know, f*** you to New Japan by going to the rival, you know. And then I was there for like 2 years and they treated me pretty good. But I tried to come back to New Japan because they finally changed presidents, which was part of the problem. And then, but NOAH tried to stop them and then say that they were going to take other talent if I jumped. And I was like, look, because of little old me, you know. So. the only way to get back to New Japan, which I really wanted to go back to because I was home, I took a job in CMLL and I wrestled with Paco Alonso down there, starved for like a year. And then because I wasn't making any money, I jumped to AAA, which got me more heat. You know, I couldn't come back to New Japan. It was just such a mess. My career was like such a mess for like 4 years, you know, but it was a great learning experience. I think that you've got to go through some shit to really like understand this business and just to grow up a bit, you know, in a way. So I finally found my way back to New Japan in 2011, and I've been here ever since.
So how did you start getting kind of these behind-the-scenes responsibilities?
I think just because, I guess I am the gaijin who's been here the longest, and I think that has a lot to do with it. And, you know, I spent a lot of time with Gato, spent a lot of time with Tiger because we travel together. We're in the same group. So I think that, you know, they just trust me. They know that I know the system. I've been through the system. I was in it in LA. I was in it here in Japan. And, you know, I have relationships with everybody. And not only that, like I've got, you know, because I traveled for all those years, like when I was in Mexico and then I was working for Ring of Honor and this and that. So I've got relationships with all those people. So, I was influential in helping New Japan and Ring of Honor link up. So, you know, that was cool. So I was able to bring them together, work together, and that's been awesome for us because, you know, we've got the Young Bucks now, we've got Cody, we've got access to all this great talent. And so I think after that, then the things started to really kind of like move in that direction, and they started giving me a bit more responsibility.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What do you think over the last year how New Japan has just grown, not only here in Japan, but also kind of on a worldwide basis?
It's wild, dude. Let me tell you, even a year ago, even with the momentum that we've had, I would have never thought that Chris Jericho would be here. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that to be real, you know, like, and I don't think anybody else did, you know, but I think it just goes to show that this really is the coolest place on earth right now, at this moment. It really is. And everybody's seen it, and it's so like electric, and everybody wants to just jump on the train, you know? I mean, it's cool. I mean, you know how it is, like Japanese stuff is like, there's a certain mystique about it. It seems cool. And this is like, you know, you kind of label it as Japanese wrestling. And now that we have the internet and, you know, and we have our access deal and stuff, people are able to see at New Japan. They get to see like these huge personalities like Kenny Omega and Okada, Tanahashi, or, you know, the Young Bucks, you know, on this stage. And they see like, you know, us in front of 10,000 people, like, Ring of Honor doesn't do 10,000 people,
right?
You know, so like they see these huge arenas and people going nuts, and then the Bullet Club came, and then the Bullet Club was like the ambassador of Japanese wrestling, basically. Mm-hmm. They reached out to, you know, all these wrestling fans, and there everybody started seeing these Bullet Club t-shirts. I'm like, what is that? I was like, oh, it's kind of like NWO, it's kind of like a DX kind of thing, but it's like these new guys, they wrestle in Japan. It's like, well, I gotta check that out, you know?
Well, then that's the thing, when you have that kind of that hot company. And I've been kind of saying is that I'm a big horror movie fan, and there's a whole genre of horror movies called J-horror, which is Japan films, like The Ring,
yeah.
But when you see them, you don't think Japanese, obviously they're Japanese style, but you can, they're worldwide.
Right.
And I think New Japan is like, it's not just exclusively for Japan. It's a worldwide style of wrestling, style of movies, J-horror, New Japan wrestling, that can translate to the entire world, because it's not a Japanese thing. It's just a brand.
Right.
You know?
But they've been working on this idea. You know, they've been working on this for a long time. Back in the 80s, you know, Japanese wrestling was 50 and 50. It was 50% foreigners, 50% Japanese, mm-hmm. you know? And that during that heyday, through their best times, that's when you had Hulk Hogan and Stan Hansen. You had these mega stars, you know, but because they were pushed and they were there for these big tours, they were champions, you know, they were wrestling against the Babas and the Inokis and this and that, you know?
But almost exclusively, you talk about like Brody or Stan Hansen or Abdul the Butcher. They rarely worked in the States. They were just complete Japanese guys.
Right, making 30, 40, 50 grand a week.
A week,
it's wild. Yeah. Stan Hansen getting drunk and lariating like dudes off their bikes.
People like, going nuts for that.
Going nuts. Just
there's still
it.
An element of that here where you can kind of, not, you know, obviously you can't abuse people, but you can yell at them and scream at them. They will run away.
Right. But I think that's what makes it cool too is that it's really rooted in realism. You know, there's a reality to it, you know? That's still there because the fans still react like it's real. Mm-hmm. You know, they haven't, like, obviously there's been people who said, you know, pro wrestling is this, pro wrestling is that, and exposed it in certain ways. But New Japan has never said this is sports entertainment or this is whatever it is. I mean, this is wrestling. This is what we do. Mm-hmm. And we don't flaunt it in their faces. You know, like we get in trouble if, God forbid, you know, like we're hanging out with, you know, somebody from the Bullet Club and somebody snaps a picture and puts it on Instagram, we get busted, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a big deal. And we all try to like protect that as much as we can. And I know that they do it in other places as well to a certain degree, but it still just hasn't been like here, you know, flaunted in front of your face, you know? So, you know, I think that is a big part of this whole kind of movement too, you know, like because the way the fans react
because of the culture of the Japanese culture of people, the Japanese.
Right.
I'm not going to say that it's a little bit more of a naive thing, because that's not the right word, but or if it's innocent or whatever, but I still think that in Japan there is a little bit of an element of the kayfabe to
it. Definitely. And even those guys, they work for New Japan or whatever, but there's a little bit of doubt in their mind that's still, they're still going, that didn't look like anything else that I've seen these guys do before. I wonder, these guys might not like each other for real, you know?
Whenever you have a great angle, it's always that way. It's like, listen, like, wrestling might be a show, but those guys are serious. Something's going on between those guys.
Right.
You know?
And that's the best. That's the
best feeling. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Let's talk a little about the Bullet Club that you saw. Like you mentioned how they became this huge thing. Because I don't think there's any original Bullet Club members even left. Is there?
Yeah. Well, Tama Tonga and Fale. Those are the
That's it.
Yeah. That's it.
They're like the OGs.
They're the OGs. They were the core four, they call themselves, which is like, well, Ferg was the first, right? And then it was Ferg, Fale, Anderson, Gallows,
Finn Balor,
and Tama. Yeah,
Finn Balor. Yeah. So the first ones was
Finn Balor.
Yeah,
then Fale, then Anderson, then Tama.
Gotcha.
Tama,
right, and then Gallows in there as well.
Right, and then Gallows came right after.
And then as each guy leaves, Finn leaves, AJ comes in. He's the head of the Bullet Club.
Exactly.
AJ leaves, Kenny comes in. He's the head of the Bullet Club.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Was that a kind of a shock for you? I mean, obviously you're a New Japan Company guy now. A few years ago when Shinsuke, Gallows, and Anderson and AJ all leave at the same time?
You know what? It was interesting because kind of all of us, like myself included, were thinking about leaving as well. So my conversation was a bit different because I got approached by WWE to possibly be a trainer at NXT. And but they were hinting they were very interested in having me join, you know, NXT or whatever. And then at around the same time, then, you know, Shinsuke started, I guess, told The Office. And then, you know, finally, you know, Chad or Anderson and Gallows dropped that bomb and AJ as well. So it was kind of all around at the same time. But, you know, I ended up obviously staying. And then those guys leaving, I mean, it was kind of surreal. When we kind of found out at the Tokyo Dome, I just remember like the aura backstage being really weird, you know, and usually that's, you know, it's the biggest show of the year. Everybody's stoked and happy and energetic. And there was a little bit of that, but it was kind of like a somber kind of feeling backstage because we knew that this whole ride was kind of ending in a way, you know, at least this chapter. But we didn't know what the future would be. Everybody was saying, oh, well, this is going to hurt us. This is really going to hurt us. This is really going to hurt us. And I think the only two people that, you know, that didn't think it was going to like, that they were going to pull through was like Gato and Hattori, because, you know, I think Gato knew at that second, like, who's going to be the next guy. And that was like Kenny, you know, I think he already knew that. So, you know, and then the rest of the guys were going to get pushed a bit, you know, a bit Naito and everything. So those are the only guys. Everybody else was freaking out. But I think those are the guys who only kept it cool. And they're like, no, we're going to be okay. We built this thing. We built this thing and it's stable. Mm-hmm. We're going to be shook, but we're not going down, you know? So, it was just weird. And then besides that, on a personal level, like, those are my best friends, you know, like Anderson, I've known him for like, I don't know, 12 years or something. He lived at my house for a year with my mom.
Oh, wow.
You know, when he was dead broke training at the dojo, we had gotten kicked out and, you know, and like,
was he the same way? He kind of came from Cincinnati or wherever that was from?
Yeah.
Just to train exclusively.
To train exclusively with no guarantees at the dojo. He came there for, I think about a year and a half. Devitt as well, or Finn Balor as well. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Devitt went over, got sent over to Japan, but Anderson was there, you know, training his ass off, being miserable and not really having that, you know, not having a dime, really just living off of, you know, indie money here and there. And we were talking about this the other day that he went and I moved to CMLL, or I went to Mexico, you know, and I went to CMLL and I said, sorry, dude, I have to go. This is my only way I'm going to get back to New Japan. I have to go to Mexico. So then he was like, dude, well, what am I going to do? I said, dude, stay at my house, you know, get your ass to Japan, you know, like call Nakamura, who they were, you know, we're all really tight. I said, call Nakamura, see if he can get, you know, get you in there. So then finally, about 3 months later, he got the call from Shinsuke saying, dude, they're going to give you a contract. They're going to bring you over. And then it was funny. He went downstairs and told my mom, because it's like, you know, they both cried.
Oh,
they both cried. And he called me. He's like, dude, you're not going to believe it, man. But they offered me a 3-month deal. And then, you know, and if I do well, they'll offer me a 6-month and then a year. And then, he didn't leave for like 8 years or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So It's just crazy, man. Like, you meet these guys that at first they hated me. Like, Ferg or Finn Balor hated me, and Anderson hated me because I was like Black Tiger at the dojo. I was like the cool one. I was getting booked. They hated my guts, you know. And then I finally came back from Japan for like an extended time, like 2 months or something. And then I took them out to eat, and we got drunk, and, you know, we talked a little bit, and then we became best friends, you know, inseparable for like, you know.
Well, when you're, that's one thing, like when you're on tour over here in Japan for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, whatever it may be, and you're all strangers in a strange land, you become very close with those guys that you're on the bus with every day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, no one understands what you guys are going through, what you guys experience.
You know, that little circle is the only people who really, yeah, truly understand. They become your family.
Right.
You know, and it's crazy that you're with these guys one day, and then the next day they're gone.
Yeah, and that's that,
you know,
quick.
And then you don't see them again. You know, like I see those guys like 3 times a year or 2 times a year for like a couple hours.
If they come to LA,
you know, if they come to LA, or, you know, last year it sucked because we were over in Long Beach.
We were here.
Then, yeah, all you guys were here. And it was like, oh man, they're like, oh, and we're all excited for like, you know, we plan it for like 4 months. Yeah, we're going to go out. We're going to get this kind of food. We're going to go yakiniku. And we're going to get a couple drinks somewhere, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, sorry, man.
No, it's funny.
I got to go do this show in Long Beach. Sorry.
That started, that was like my last little hurrah with WWE, because my contract had already ended, but I loved Japan so much. So I was coming, and we have this group text of me, Gallows, Anderson, and the Joes that are Samoan, meaning Roman Reigns and Samoa
the
Joe.
The Joes that are Samoan.
And I don't know actually, I do know. We were like Guns N' Roses in 1987. The five of us here, we went insane.
Right.
The money was spent. The bathtubs were shit in. There was a lot of stuff. But it's like,
sounds like my kind of party.
But it was like the last hurrah. And like, right. I miss those guys. We text all the time. Right. It's like, oh, it's four there and one here now, you know?
Dude, I got to be honest, man. Like, when you guys did Talk and Shop, it stung a little bit.
Oh,
you know, it did.
Now, let's talk about this. Yeah. So Talk and Shop, which is, and it's not official. It's Talk and Shop presented by Talk and Jericho.
Right.
And that's all stemmed from when I had Gallows and Anderson on my show, when they first came into WWE. I barely knew Gallows when he used to be with Punk.
Right.
Never met Chatto. So who are these kind of guys, you know? And then just talking to him, I was like, holy shit, these guys are like a comedy team. And then they're saying, yeah, they do this thing called Talk and Shop. I'm like, we should do it on my show if you want to.
Yeah.
And this has started a tradition, which is just, it gets more drunker and drunker and drunker every time. But I know that you were the original purveyor of Talk and Shop along with those guys. So
I'd like to, if you don't mind, Chris, I'd like to tell you where you went wrong. You never go over 30 minutes. That's the thing. Because Gallows and Anderson, they can't hold their liquor, man. So,
well, let me before you get into it, let me tell you where I also went wrong.
Okay.
A lot of times we start drinking before we start recording.
Oh.
So by the time we press play, we're already at 60%. So after 30 minutes, we're at 100. You gotta pace yourself. But the last Talk and Shop we did in Nuremberg, Germany, where Anthrax showed up, the band, like, just, I don't know.
That's wild.
It was the worst, most, that's where Gallows as Reptile almost got booked by Carlos Colon in Puerto Rico. He had him on the phone.
No way.
Primo was the guest, right? So he calls up his dad. He's like, hey, Pops, I got this guy. He's like, I'm a reptile. I'm a hookerana. So you don't go longer than 30 minutes. So tell us the story.
You never go longer than 30 minutes. Yeah, and that was just like me and Chatto Anderson, you know, having a couple drinks with, you know, and they're going, man, you know, Chatto, of course, saying, you know, I'm a funny motherfucker. Man, you know, and you're a good sidekick, dude. Why don't we should start a podcast? And I was like, yeah, we should start a podcast. Yeah, everybody will want to know what it's like to be in New Japan at this time, because this is when they were just getting a little hot. The Bullet Club was getting a little steam, you know. And I said, yeah, that would be cool. You know, we can. And he's like, dude, we'll just get drunk and we'll just, you know, we'll just talk about our day, what's going on the tour, you know, this and that, you know. No format. I was like, yeah, no format, no format. I said, but the only thing is, like, we should do it 30 minutes. Yeah, that's good, you know? So then I was like, he's like, so the first one, we'll get, like, I don't know, we'll, like, interview Gallows. So Gallows wasn't even supposed to be on the podcast. We were just going to interview him. But when we brought him, you put a mic in front of Gallows.
Gosh.
And the guy, you know, turns into something else, you know, and he's like all over the place, and he's cutting us off, not letting anybody talk.
Yes!
We started a story. We never finished the story because Gallows went into four more stories, and by the end, you know, 30 minutes is done, like, in no time. And we're like, let's do one more. So basically, you know, after we did those first two, you know, Gallows left. I think the room, you know, we were drinking, talking about it, and Gallows left. And then Jag leans over, he goes, all right, that motherfucker's in. So that was it. That was how the three of us kind of started talking shop. And then I was the legit producer. Like, I'd put it all together and edit it, and, you know, and then we started to, you know, create the music, and then we started to create all the characters on there.
Did you have any characters on?
I was the producer.
Okay.
So I was the dickhead keeping everybody in charge and in line. 30 minutes, we'd get to like 30, you know, 30 minutes and 10 seconds, and I'd be flipping out like, guys, we're going to shut this motherfucker down, you know?
The Chato's kind of taking that over now as ipso facto straight man.
Right, right.
Meaning he tries not to get as drunk
The rest. Right, and that was, yeah, exactly. I was the straight man, and mm-hmm. then they were the two wild men. And then Chad was kind of somewhere in between, you know, like he was the... kind of the leader, I guess, you know. So the Leonardo. That
was it. Always just you three guys?
Then we started bringing in the boys, you know. We started bringing in the Young Bucks, and then Uncle Alan and Tama would show up from would show up here and there. Yeah. And then we just anybody who would come in, we would try to get them to come and hang out, and we just try to get them drunk, you know.
Right.
And then just see what happens. But because there was no format, it was like it was just the boys hanging out, you know. It really felt like it was just the boys hanging out. You just happen to be,
that's what it
be
is,
recording, right? You know?
That's why it works.
Right.
Even as drunk as it gets.
Right.
It's literally, you know, podcasting in general is just a fly on the wall, but throw some alcohol in there and it's like, this really is fly on the
wall. Dude, I have 20... like episodes that will never be released to the world.
I think out of the four we did, two of them should not have been released.
Right.
But, you know.
But the people wanted it, right?
They loved it so much. The one we did from China with Stroman as the rotating fourth,
yeah,
did a million downloads.
I just met that guy, man.
Oh,
he's,
yeah.
Interesting.
He's a trip.
Right?
Yeah.
He's a trip.
He was great on Tish's, because the thing was with Tish's, and it happened with every single guy that showed up, no one knows what the hell's going on.
Right.
When you first, like, it's really intimidating, because, like, I remember Primo was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, yeah. What am I doing here? You know, it's been 10 minutes and, like, no one's asked me a question. And yeah. I tried to say something, Gallus cut me off right away.
You got to fight for your spot
you
in
really
that,
do.
Man.
It's really
pretty
do.
Good. Yeah.
You really do.
Dude, yeah. I miss those days. So, yeah, I was a little like, oh, man.
Did you feel bad?
I did.
Did
I
they
like,
warn you at all?
No, they told me. They're like, dude, we're going to do Talking Shop on Jericho, on Talk is Jericho. And I was like, I want to be there. I mean, I wanted to be a part of it, you know?
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
I may have wrote a diss track one time about you guys, just dissing all you guys.
did you really?
And it's, yeah, it's on Six Trees Vice 2, my mixtape that's available on iTunes.
Do you have it?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it an original song?
Yes, an original song.
Please send it to me. I'll drop it in.
I'll drop it. Oh, you're perfect.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it started out as a diss track, but it ends like me just begging you to let me on the podcast again, you know?
This is what we should do.
And I'm here, motherfuckers. Yeah, I made it.
You made it.
Yo, you think it was bad with Macho Tis Hope? Well, you ain't seen nothing, brother. Carl Harris and Luke Swallows. Why to junk? The verbal shots have been fired. Blah, blah. First things first, I want to let you know I'm not the jealous type, contrary to whatever said by Carl.
Yeah, Carl.
It's just, I got a gripe. You got four mics, podcast one, you ain't doing it right.
Uh-uh.
On first hand, you're going over 30 minutes. My man, if you go over, who the hell's going to want to hear it?
Not me.
On second hand, you got three main hosts. A guest mic open. Well, what about me, bro? Let's address the elephant in the room. You got a new producer and it ain't this who. Now the boys think they all cool, cause they got Jericho, that talking buffoon. Alright, I didn't mean that, Mr. Jericho. Sometimes I get a little too emotional, but I got a couple things I wanna say to the new producer, Y2J. So what, your podcast is better than mine. So what, you got wittier rhymes. So what, you go more than half an hour. So what, you got your own channel and all the power. So what, you got a list. You can put me down twice cause I don't give up. So what, so what, so what, so what, so what, so what. We used to be the hoots, we used to be the group. Podcast in 30 minutes and drink a few. Now you're kicking with Y2J, that's Y2 lame. What the hell's that, Ola Boo? We used to be the hoots, we used to be the group. Podcast in 30 minutes and drink a few. Now you're kicking with Y2J, that's Y2 lame. What the hell's that, Ola Boo? I didn't mean to insult you again when I say that it's quite too lame. I mean it the way the Spaniards say it when they talking about a beautiful man.
Yeah, that's right, lame. Okay, I'm lying. It's not even a word. I'm sorry.
You gotta understand. Without the Biz Kids, I got no crew and no fame. I know the boys are not to blame. I was an a-hole trying to control the game. So maybe we could talk it out about Talk is Jericho and Talk is Shout. I'm a changed man. I'll let you go for 5 hours. Just please, just give me a chance. Damn.
But what I want to do is, like, I keep telling those dumb idiots to send me their schedule because I want to fly there just to hang out and do a Tiz, you know, Tishes. Because we were in Japan together, but I got super mad at them because all they were doing was hanging out with their stupid sponsors. Right. I'm like, we got to do a Talk and Shop. Like, well, I don't have time.
Yeah.
I mean, in Japan.
Yeah. But in the Tokyo Dome.
I don't know if you know this, but Anderson is, like, super responsible and respectful. Right. And I was, like, slapping their sponsors and, like, you know, kicking them in the ass and let's do a Talk and Shop. Like, well, we got to go out with this family. I'm like, fuck your family. Don't think they always take, I don't give a shit. So I'm trying to find a place where they go next time. Maybe if they're in LA, if you're
cool.
in town, I'll fly there too. And we need to do an
awesome.
Original
let's do
Tishes
it.
And you can just bury them for stealing your idea.
Exactly.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah. Without me, I mean, where they are now, like, yeah, where are they now?
Are they
right?
now? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So how is it for you now? Like you mentioned when those guys leave, mm-hmm. who do you hang out with now when you're on the road?
Trimperetta.
He's
the famous Trimperetta.
Adam Edge calls him a real life Simpsons character. Yeah. Brent yeah. Toretta.
Really, real interesting dude. Everybody knows how interesting, weird he is, but a great, great person. And, you know, he's just like the rest of us. You know, when we're on the road, we like to laugh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he supplies a lot of that laughter. It's hard, you know, it was hard to, you know, couldn't replace Chatto and Gallus. You just can't. But there was a lot of guys who definitely stepped up, and Juice Robbins is another guy who's awesome. Just one of the boys.
That's cool.
Yeah, really good dude. Really, he really wants to hang out with you if there's some time during.
Yeah, I might have met him in passing when he was in NXT, but I don't really know him.
Just good dude.
Yeah,
exactly like those dudes, you know.
See, but that's what happens over here. Like, even for a guy like yourself, not just as a wrestler, but kind of having this second life as a behind the scenes guy. Mm-hmm. And for him, you know, I think he was CJ Parker in NXT,
right.
Leaves or you know whatever it is, and then shows up here. And now he's main eventing shows with Kenny and all that sort of thing. And when this company is as hot as it is, it's a viable second option
mm-hmm.
to being in WWE.
Absolutely. I mean, what's cool here is you can come here like he did, like Juice did, with not really much on the resume, you know? Like, he was in NXT or whatever, but they didn't really push him the way that you know, everybody wants to be pushed.
It wasn't like he was like when Finn Balor was their main eventing and the headliner.
Right,
right,
right. But he comes here. And within, I would say, a year and a half, you know, they already know what they want, where they're going to push him and how they're going to do it. And they bring him in as a young boy. So, you know, here's a guy who's already been wrestling, you know, 8 years or something, 9 years, and was already in the system at WWE. But he comes here and he has to start over, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was partly he wanted that. And then when the office got wind of it, they were like, oh, that's great, you know, mm-hmm. because nothing more. The Japanese fans, they love an underdog. They love to get behind the guy who scratches and crawls his way to the top. Mm. They love that, you know, and it's a great story. Everybody loves that, really. You know, that's, and you look back at every, you know, TV show, movie, you know,
of course,
book,
yeah, right.
We love that. So, so here he goes, and like finally he gets the opportunity, and it's like little by little, you know, you got each stepping stone, you know. There was a Goto before that, there was, you know, Suzuki, there was this, and then finally there's an Okada, and then there's a Kenny, and then he's like here, he's main eventing mm-hmm. shows, you know. And but he had all the goods, and sometimes in other offices they don't see that this guy has the goods.
Right.
He's got the size, he's got everything, he's got the look, and you know, he comes over here. He becomes like a little idol, you know, for all the chicks. All the chicks dig him, you know. They think he's a handsome dude, and you know, and he comes in and they exploit that, you know, and they make it something.
Make a star.
They make a star, and that's the thing that what's cool about this company is like they're really good at making stars. Mm-hmm. They're really, really good at making stars and making stars quickly, you know. So
I think you're talking about even like with Jay White working with Tanahashi.
Exactly. Yeah.
At the Tokyo Dome, it's like is Jay White ready? Well, he better be because
we'll
he's
find
got
out,
this
right?
big opportunity.
Right.
Yeah, you know.
But you never know that, you know, Naito's a good example of that. You know, I don't know how familiar you are with Naito, but like he got pushed finally for all these big opportunities and he wasn't ready, you know. Mm. But 2 years later, that all going through all that, made him who made he him is ready, today right, exactly. and made him ready. You know, sometimes we got to go through it, you know, like
when,
I said.
When you, you know, I know that you're here at the Tokyo Dome. I think you're staying until next week because there's a couple shows.
Right.
Do you spend a lot of time in Japan, like in between tours, not working?
Yeah, not anymore. You know, back in the day I did. But, you know, now I try to get home as much as I can. You know, I've got a girlfriend and a dog that I like to spend time with in L.A. So, you know, I'm trying to get back home. And there's other things that I'm interested besides wrestling. And it's kind of cool talking to you because you not only, you know, I respect you for all the things you've done in wrestling. And, you know, the 12-year-old me is going a little crazy inside, you know.
Yeah.
But like, all the stuff that you do outside of wrestling and that, I just like, I admire the fact that you go, you know, you do your wrestling stuff and then you go and you take time off and then you go pursue all these things that you're interested in. And that's the kind of person that I am, you know?
Right. Sure.
So, so like I'm into acting, I'm into other things. I'm into creating, you know, writing music. You mentioned hip hop music and stuff like that.
So it's hip hop stuff that you do?
Yeah. Hip hop stuff. You know, I never consider myself a rapper, but I I make beats. You know, I write songs. It started in Mexico, being miserable in AAA. And then writing songs with me and Jindrak rapping over. I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Jindrak.
Well, yeah. from 10 years ago. Right, yeah. Right. That's another guy who's really coming to his own over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hero, right?
Just another good dude. And who's, you know, the opportunity wasn't there for him in North America, or in WWE, you should say. So then he moved on, you know, to Mexico. And now he's a huge soap star there and doing all kinds of stuff. So, you know, and writing projects. Like, I think it's cool that you do, you know, you have this web series that you're doing, you know, and all that. I like, that's all the kind of things that I'm into. So, like, it's cool to see that, you know, it's like, okay, look, this is possible, you know.
Sure, right.
You don't have to just be thinking about wrestling and just doing wrestling, because this gives you more to play with when you come back to the ring, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's things that other people aren't doing or taking advantage of, you know, because they're just about the wrestling. And I love wrestling. It's the thing that I'm passionate about the most, but I need a break from it. You know, I've been doing it a long time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I need the challenge.
Yeah.
I should say
creatively, you need to be
right? stimulated in a different way.
What was the diss track called?
What was it called? I think it's like, I don't know what it is called. I forgot. You write songs, man, and put them down. I think it's like, I'll diss your shiz or something like that, I think. Diss your shiz? Diss your piz shiz? Yeah, something like that. It's something like that.
What do you do when you're here in Japan in between tours? Like, for example, I think you're here for like a week, maybe.
Right, and I got a couple days off. You know, sometimes I go into the office and I'm doing, you know, office work or, you know, there's always something to be handled. There's emails and catching up. And
but you mentioned today that you went into that special shop.
Yeah, there's a shop called Hao Ming in Shibuya. They make like wrestling inspired kind of like urban wear and stuff. Really cool t-shirts and shit. And I have a website, rockymirrormerch.com, and where I sell my goods and stuff. So I just made a deal with them to sell some stuff over here. So,
that's cool.
Yeah. So like, you know, that's another thing, you know, that's like a little family business. Me and my girlfriend run out of our home and the dog, you know, watches us, you know, and helps. So I'm working on that kind of stuff. And then, you know, it's the usual sponsors and stuff like that. I'll write songs up in my room. You know, I take my keyboard with me, my controller and a mic, and I'll record. You know, I'll write songs.
A lot nowadays to be able to do that.
It's so cool. It's so cool. It's so easy to, you know, when I did, what was cool is the two mixtapes that I did them almost all, like probably 80-90% here in Japan on the road, you know? So we go out to dinner or whatever, and I'd be like, okay, I know it's like 1 a.m, but there's a song I gotta finish or whatever. And then you know how it is, like when you're writing music, like you have to get it done.
When the muse is there, you gotta
finish it, you know? So I don't know how many times I was up until like 6 a.m, re-recording or recording again or like tweaking, and you just can't stop until you feel like it's ready. Then you wake up the next day, and you know, I was having a couple highballs while I was doing it, you know? So wake up the next day, you listen back, you're like, what the hell did I just make?
Yeah, explain what the highball is. It's like, it's in the can here.
Right. It's a little can, so yeah, it's soda water and whiskey, and it's about 7%.
And they sell them at like convenience stores.
Yeah, come in a little can, and they're ready to go. You just pop the top, and you're a drinker.
Have you ever had any of the hamburgers that come in the vending machine, Gutenbergers?
No. Oh. I won't touch that stuff, no, man.
They got some weird ass shit here.
Nah. You can buy anything from a vending machine.
Oh, yeah. Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. Know. The one that even in Fukuoka, I said, can I have a coffee? They bring me a little, and they would say hot or cold. Like, yeah, yeah. Of course it's hot. Coffee needs to be hot, not here. And they bring me a can of coffee that's hot. I'm like, okay, just like you're opening.
Right.
Drink the coffee out of the can.
Dude. Yeah. Dude, Gato loves us. He's always drinking those. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're good. I mean, what's cool is like the Japanese fans here, they like to give you stuff like that. You know, like you're on the road. They know that you're on the move. So energy drinks, you know, coffee.
Yeah, yeah, little, sure.
You know, pop the top. You're ready to rock.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's actually nice. You know, like. What's cool, like, I don't know, do they do that so much? Like, I feel like they don't do that as much in the States, like fans give you presents.
No,
and
not
like
the
that.
Same.
No, right?
You might get something here if you do a signing or something like that.
Okay.
But no,
it's so common here.
We have little dolls of yourself and all that sort of thing. You know, they're very creative.
Personalized handwritten notes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, personalized handwritten notes.
Well, with all these beautiful, like, cartoon artwork and stuff.
They spent time drawing it and everything. Like, it's so cool. Like, really, the fans here are... they're just super special.
And what are some of the strange things that you've noticed being in Japan?
Oh God.
to me, the thing I noticed the most is that they're very like honorable and kind of timid, but also kind of really perverted sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just be on the train. And
they like to awkwardly touch you people, you know, like that don't know you at all. You know, they see like, you know, you've got, you know, some muscles there and they're quick to not even ask, but to just start grabbing you, you know? And chest, you know, or like not just like arms and tricep. I mean, they're going like straight, like right above an inch above the nipple, you know?
It's like you go on the train or on the subway and you see a bunch of businessmen reading the comic books of like a giant penis, like attacking girls and like, you know, killing
the
them with his...
The sports section or, you know, the sports newspaper where they open it up in the middle, there's always like a completely, you know, naked woman and they're just reading it on the, on the train like nothing.
Porno cartoons.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sex positions and all that sort of stuff.
But it's not, but nobody bats an eye, you know?
Yeah,
that's just life, you know?
I know that's funny too, is just like the over-exaggerated popping at strange things. Like today, I had one of my lighted jackets and we were doing a video shoot. And I didn't want to put it on the camera
because
he's going to see it live. But I said, this has a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, surprise. Yeah. So here it is. I hit the button and it's all like this. Oh, like just this wonderment. Like, oh,
makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Wow. Look at this. I just got a text from Gallows right now. Our group text is called Sour Sissies. So there you go. We'll have to take a picture and send it to him later. But you mentioned earlier that you were offered a chance to be a trainer.
Yeah.
At an See, are you known for being a trainer? Do you have a school or do you train people?
No, I never had a school, but when I was at the LA Dojo, because I was one of the first group of guys to go through there. So anybody after the first group, basically, you know how it is with wrestling training. You're in the first class, then you know, you get a job as either taking the bumps or, you know, or teaching people how to do stuff, you know. So that basically, like, when Anderson came in and Balor came in and you know, Mikey Nichols and so guys, you know, so and so forth. Then I became the guy to, when I was off from working here, I would help out and I would be the trainer. You know, I'd be the stand-in or like I would assist whoever, if we had somebody, you know, from Japan during that time, I would be assisting them, you know,
right,
teaching. So like I was telling the story the other day that Chad came in, Anderson, and you know, he came from Cincinnati. He thought he was just the shit, you know he is. So he comes in and he, you know, nobody had ever criticized him about his wrestling, and we were doing like something easy like snap mare out of the corner, stomp the guy like a bunch of times, like 4 or 5 times. We're working on stomps, so he snap mares the guy, starts stomping. I go, stop. Broom gets quiet and he goes, and he's looking at me, and I was like, dude, those suck. And they were the worst stomps ever. They were so bad, you know? And then this was during the time I think he hated me, but then that was the first time he ever got criticized in wrestling. And I said, you know, dude, out of all of us, you're a lot bigger than all of us. I was like, you should be like stomping the hell out of us, you know, bring your leg up, man, you know, like, and so teaching that, because that's Japanese style 101,
sure,
stomping. You know, the biggest move you throw in your first 3 years, 4 years is a drop kick, you know? So, you know,
don't even hit the ropes all that much.
Barely hit the ropes, you know? So just going over basics like that. And then he talks about it now. He's like, dude, now, you know, I'm great at this, you know, like I'm really good at it. And I just needed somebody to tell me, you know, because I in Cincinnati, he was like the best guy there.
He's the top dog,
you know?
So was it, well, first of all, how did they contact you to be a trainer? Who in the system knew that you'd be good?
Well, I had a friend who used to work here in Giant Bernard, or also known as...
Oh, gotcha, right there. Big Matt, right?
Big Matt, yeah, Big Matt.
Giant Bernard. Yeah. You're talking about...
A-Train.
What was he like, Yokozuna name?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Tensai.
Yeah.
Matt Bloom.
Yeah.
So, Matt Bloom... reached out to me, and it was just as a guest trainer for a week, and so I didn't really tell anybody here, you know.
I
thought it would be, dude. I'm the guy who wants to be challenged as much as he can.
That's great.
You know?
So I
was like, yeah, you know, I'm not gonna tell anybody over here, but I'm just gonna go do it, you know. And at that time, I wasn't under a contract, so I was like, okay, cool. So I'm just gonna go and do it, and I didn't have any responsibility here.
How was that? What did you think of the whole performance center?
I thought it was
it's crazy,
really cool. It's cool. I mean, it's way different from anything that I ever wrestled in, you know, before, even in the LA Dojo. I mean, it was nice, but it's nothing like that place, you know, state of the art type facility. But I thought it was cool. You know, there's so much, there's 7-8 trainers there. They come from all kinds of different backgrounds. It's really interesting. Like, not to knock the system, I'm not knocking the system, but I still think that people just need to go out there and experience it and live it kind of.
It's hard when you have like 70 or 80 guys in the building and you're waiting your turn to take two bumps.
Right. And you can't really, spend the attention that you need to on everybody.
Right.
But I still think it's a top class facility. And, you know, they have Terry Taylor there. They've got, you know, Matt,
Brookside, Smiley.
These guys are awesome, you know, and like, these are the guys who traveled the roads, man, you know, and really worked and honed their craft for so many years. And you have to respect that. They have a lot to teach, you know. Right. And so I figured, like, I feel like I'm that kind of guy that I could actually fit very well into that kind of system, because I did have to cut my teeth all
been
over.
Around.
I've been around. I've been through everything minus WWE, you know. So, but I've literally worked for every single company, like major company on this planet besides New York.
So, working for Vince. Was it a hard decision to kind of turn down the opportunity to go work there?
You know, yes and no. I mean, obviously, there's always like that part of you that thinks, you know, what is the other side like? You know, would the grass be greener on the other side? But I just really feel that I'm needed here. You know, I really do feel like I'm needed here. And I think that I could help the next two or three generations here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, I could go and be another cog in the wheel over there, or it could be on the ground floor or something huge over here. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was kind of the thing that was important to me.
It's a smart move, because when we're talking about the expansion and kind of all the stuff that's going on, and even with Gato was telling me, the reason why he brings in so many foreigners is because they're trying to break into the U.S. market.
Right.
So with the more English-speaking people, you're really needed here.
Right.
And also the fact that you're trusted by the Japanese guys. So it's a great position to be in when you really think about it.
No, I feel fortunate that that they've trusted me, you know, so far so good. And, you know, I just want to continue to, you know, do good work and, you know, and expand. I want to be a part of this expansion. You know, I think that we haven't even hit the top yet. Mm-hmm. We don't know where we're going to land at the end of this. And who knows, you know, maybe in the expansion, maybe I could hold a title in the U.S., you know, as some kind of executive or something in the future or something, you know. So like, why? And plus, this is my home, dude. I've been here for so long. It took me so long to get back here. And I love this place. I love, you know, I've been working with these guys for years. You know, Gato, you know, is a friend, you know, and Hattori is a friend, you know, like I look up to them, you know, they've taught me a lot over the last couple of years, but they're family. You know how it is. We talked about that earlier, you know, so it'd be hard to walk away from your family.
Can you speak Japanese?
Not really. I say no.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me how good Kenny speaks it.
He's fantastic.
I said, this is not just, you know, sitting around in the back room. He's must have taken some lessons or something.
Lessons, I think that, yeah.
Some friends, maybe.
Friends, yeah. that he actually... I think it was different for him, you know, because everybody here in New Japan, everybody has some English.
Yeah.
Everybody has some English. But I think that in DDT, when he was coming up, not everybody had English. So he was kind of forced to have to speak Japanese and learn Japanese. Mm. So I think it was just different for him. You know, there's another guy on the roster, Fale, that speaks perfect Japanese as well.
And New Zealand.
He's from New Zealand. He played professional rugby here, but he also went to university here. So a part of that is you have to learn Japanese, you know. But somebody was telling me the other day that they think that Kenny actually even speaks maybe better than Fale, which is interesting.
It's really good. Tried to learn it, but I could never, because there's so many different like accents and dialects where if you learn in Tokyo and go to Osaka, it's different.
Right.
And it's different in Fukuoka. And when you're trying to learn a different language, the worst thing that can happen is you try and say it, people look at you, it kills your confidence.
Right. Dude, my accent is good.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that I've down. And I think it's because Japanese, for some reason, is very similar to Spanish.
Mm,
you
really?
Know? Yeah. You use a lot of the same kind of accents and things. Mm. So it's similar. There's some words that are even like aho. Aho is stupid in Japanese and Osaka kind of language, but aho is garlic in Spanish, you know. Right. Baka, same thing. It's stupid. They say stupid, you know, but in Spanish, it's a cow. You know? There is some words that, you know, there's a bunch
same
of
same
like,
pronunciation.
Same pronunciation and stuff.
Same
but,
linguistics.
Yeah, linguistics, but obviously mean two completely different things. So I think that Spanish has kind of helped a little bit. But I think that if I spoke Spanish fluently, like as my first language, then it's a bit different. I think there's some mixture between knowing English as my first language then learning a bit of Spanish and then, you know, listening to the accents. For some reason, I have like a good ear for that kind of thing. I don't know why.
Talking about expanding into the States, and you mentioned that the last time WWE was in Japan, you guys were in Long Beach. How instrumental and involved are you actually being an LA guy and also kind of being the American liaison? Are you kind of doing a lot of that field work, or did you?
Yeah, I think that that was another part of like the reason that I think they chose me as well to help is because I was from LA. They knew they were going to be in LA. They were going after Los Angeles. That was going to be their first place to make an imprint. So I think because of that, they chose me for this kind of whole position, and I helped out a lot. Yeah, I kind of served as, they would basically, you know, like a consultant kind of thing. They would ask me questions, what I thought about this and that, you know, and then kind of from there, like, I just kind of everything, you know. It was the first time, so nobody really knew what to expect, you know. So
But also for them too, like I know the building that they did, just from what Don told me, and it was kind of more of a field house type of thing.
Right.
It's like I said, dude, you guys should do it. I told Gato, go to the Forum.
Right.
Go to the sports arena, man. You know, you guys put 6,000-7,000 people in there. That's more than WWE puts in there.
Right.
But I maybe don't want to take too much too soon or something.
And I think that I think that they're pretty smart in the way. I know you're not the only one person who said that, you know, but I feel like making sure that they're taking the necessary steps step by step. It's not like, hey, boom, here we are and we've arrived, you know, because in a year that might fade, you know what I'm saying? So they want to like just build slowly, you know, and strong, you know, take strong steps instead of just taking that giant leap and saying, oh, hey, we're going to do a 10,000 seat building. We could do probably a 10,000 seat building. We'd probably do okay. But like, we want people. It's kind of cool to turn people away, I think, at this point, you know,
create that demand, that mystery.
Yeah, like, will they come back? Will they not come back? Nobody knows, you know.
What's kind of the game plan for doing shows in the States? Just, do you want to do three a year? Do you want to do tours?
Right. I think that, and I can say this because our owner said this, Kidani. He said that eventually he wants to do somewhere between like 10 and 20 shows a year all throughout the state. So I would think that would be like a touring schedule. We'd go in, we'd do five, six cities. Yeah, we'd do like five cities each time, you know, L.A., Chicago, New York, probably all the major ones, you know, to start. But I think that we would do very well.
It's interesting to me, just knowing how the company is and how the boss is. You guys, the more shows you do in the States, the less WWE is going to be happy about it.
Right.
Until they're going to do something to kind of strike back, because that's just kind of how they are.
Well, I mean, we saw a little bit of it in Long Beach because they did end up running. They sent NXT, I would say, like a month before us, or you know, kind of randomly. It wasn't on the docket, and then all of a sudden it kind of popped up.
It was like a Detroit, Chicago, LA.
Yeah, just like, you know, so. But and I think that's just to kind of test some things. I mean, nobody knows, right? You know, like, sure. and the thing, though, of course, I think they want us to do well in a certain.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, I'm here, too,
of course,
with the blessing of the company.
Right.
I didn't need the permission, but it was like, check mark, do it. Sounds great.
Why wouldn't they? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, but it creates a demand in business and an excitement in business that we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, dude, you were right in the thick of the whole thing back in the day. You know, so it's like, I'd be curious to see what happens in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, just, you know, slowly, baby steps, see what happens in 5 years, you know. And why not? You know, I mean, like, already some talent left, you know, mm-hmm. 2 years ago or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What happens in 5 years, you know?
Yeah. Who's to say they won't open up, you know, the wallet to bring Okada over?
Right.
They could stick him in NXT for 5 years. They don't care. They could pay him $1 million a year just to take him away from here.
And that's the crazy thing.
Different world.
Yeah, it's a different world. And the crazy thing is that, you know, they have the means.
Sure.
To do it, you know,
bottomless pockets.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about your wrestling career as we wind down here. Now, in Japan, being here for so many years, I saw the other night you did the 6-man with the Young Bucks and Kenny. And do you find now that you're taking on more office responsibilities, do you have the same position on the show, wrestling wise, bigger, smaller? Are you used as a utility guy when they need somebody?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of crazy because July was the Long Beach show, right? July 2017. So I took on more responsibility in the office, and it just to happen coincide with me and Trent. We were a tag team, and we, you know, I've always kind of been in the junior tag division. That's kind of always been my thing. I've had like 3 or 4 partners. Finally, you know, Trent was the last one. And I've been pushing for Trent to go to move up to the heavyweights. So along with the storyline, that was our last match. You know, Trent says goodbye, and now you know, I've got a new role as kind of a manager now.
You guys were Roppongi Vice.
Now we're Roppongi 3K, you know. And you know, I've got Sho and Yo, and they're two young guys.
Couple good looking guys,
you know. But I mean, what's cool is though, like I got to come up with everything, you know, like I came up with the look, the colors, the music.
Did you pick those two guys to go together?
No, those are suggested though, because they've always kind of been a tag team. Okay. So they've always had a certain chemistry. And then, you know, when they brought them back, they didn't know what they were going to do. But since Roppongi Vice was breaking up, it kind of made sense. They needed a tag team to fill that, you know. So, and to be honest, I don't want anything to do with the tag team division anymore. Just, I've won the belt like 8 times. Like, I just don't feel like there's anything more for me to do there. But I, of course, I'd always be interested in doing something singles. But I don't know if the office really sees that.
So I was wondering.
You know what I'm saying? And it's kind of weird to be like, oh, yeah, you know, every booker or every person who's been in charge is always trying to put themselves over. But, like, I can't do that because we have the most unselfish booker in the world, you know? Yeah. Like, he's the only booker who loses every match.
Jobber all the time. That's what I said. You're the only booker that doesn't ever put yourself over.
Right.
What's wrong
with
you?
Right. So I feel like, oh, man, I can't be that guy. You know? Like, I can't work in the office and then ask to get put over and win titles and you know, so
Romero's out there just putting himself over.
Guy, man. so I mean, but just I mean, and we're talking about challenges again, like, but I just want the challenge, you know, the challenge of going for the belt, and you know, like, that's more interesting than actually winning the belt.
Have you ever had the belt or
Black Tiger when I was Black Tiger, but never as Rocky Romero, you know? So it would be interesting. And I think it could be a cool angle because the fans don't know me as that kind of singles wrestler. So, and I am a guy who, if I'm on the card, I'm probably going to lose, you know, so, especially at this point. But you know, just that good underdog story, you know, and that's what, you know, sets a fire under me, like getting the people behind me as an underdog, you know. And then, hey, if I lose, no problem. Yeah, I don't care about that. No, not at all. But I think it's more exciting to lose sometimes, you know, and to build that, you know. One of the greatest angles that we ever had was Gato's idea and it was me and Trent, and basically I went on this losing streak, and Trent was like, dude, what the hell's, you know, your problem, man? You know, like, you just keep losing. And every time if he was in there, he would win. If I was in there, I'd lose. Mm-hmm. So like, we built this, you know, this angle up. We're finally like, you know, we were in this tournament, and then finally somehow I get the, you know, I roll the guy up, then I get a little more confidence, and then, you know, we beat the guy together, you know, and then finally it's like, I win, you know, the whole thing. And then it's like, we're hugging it out, and like, everybody thought we were going to break up. It seemed like these two guys were going to break up, and it got us like way more over than we had ever been.
Sure. Because it's more of a story then.
It's just a story, yeah. You know? And so it was really eye-opening. It's like, you don't have to always be the guy that wins to get the people behind you, to get the people interested. It's just, you just need a good story.
Sure.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself like in the next 10 years? Do you want to really get involved even more with New Japan, or is there a chance you already turned down one opportunity with WWE? Right. Some people's goal is to end up in WWE. Mm-hmm. Some people really don't care.
Right.
What's your like thoughts and where you want to be and what you want to do?
I mean, dude, I'm going to be straight up like, you know, I grew up in LA idolizing WWF. You know, we didn't have WCW, we didn't have NWA.
Canada, it was the same.
Dude, when I used to see a Pro Wrestling Illustrated and I used to see Ric Flair on that or Sting, I'd be like, what? Who the fuck are those guys?
Yeah, I'd be so confused. I knew of them only because of the magazine.
Right. And it'd be so confused, and they'd be bleeding and shit. And I was like, where the hell are these guys wrestling? Where is this?
Guys?
Yeah. So confused. But then when I in my teenage years, you know, then we had WCW Nitro, you know, guys like Monday Night Wars, you know, and then that kind of opened up like New Japan and Japanese wrestling, you know. It was like, well, where did this guy Chris Jericho or Eddie Guerrero come from? You know, these guys, like where did they come from? And all of a sudden, you know, they're here, and you know, and but they were, it was cool about WCW is they would talk about like these guys,
they're cutting their teeth with New Japan,
they're cutting their teeth in Japan. I was like, so I get, you know, I started finding out about Liger and all this, and that, you know, I see Mysterio and you know, I see these J Cup tournaments, bro. Mm-hmm. J Cup tournaments blew my fucking mind, you know? Yeah. So then once I saw those things and I really studied, you know, the guys that I look up to, you know, I was like, dude, I want to go there. I want to wrestle there. That's where I want to make my mark. I want to be like these guys who and you know, they inspired, you guys inspired me, you know, that generation inspired me, and I was like, I'm gonna do that. And then that just kind of became the focus. It wasn't even about like the ending, like a WWF or a WWE, it was like, or you know, or WCW. It was like, I was the guy who was like, you know, first time I saw ECW, I was like, dude, I want to go there. Yeah. Oh, you know, there's something about being that underdog company and being a part of that, like that cool rock concert, you know, type feeling, that just like that, you just feel like rock star, and I like being it right in the thick of that. It just seems cool. Like, I don't know if I mean, I think I would do fine in like a, you know, a corporate world or whatever. I think I'd be good. I think I handle myself well, but there's a certain part of me that I think doesn't want that. I don't know, we'll see. I like where I'm at in my life. I'm really happy. Because New Japan is not so strict on certain things, I can go and do acting. You know, I can go and you know, pursue that when I'm off, as long as I show up for work when they ask me. You know,
have you had any good parts acting wise? Have you been in anything?
I mean, the only problem is last year I got so busy because of all the other responsibilities. Yeah, yeah. But like the year before, I booked a spot on a CBS show like Scorpion. And did guest star spot, you know, and there was no wrestling people on there who knew me. This was like
you're auditioning,
auditioning, you know, doing the thing, and it's fun, and like I said, it's challenging going into an audition room, and you know,
I'm so bad at auditions.
I know they're
terrible,
but they're so interesting, and like what goes through your head, and what, you know, and like you're going against all these other guys, and they all look like you.
But that's where the whole concept of "But I'm Chris Jericho" stemmed from. That I left wrestling to go study acting, like. Right. It's what you just said is exactly what I said. You'd go into an audition with 10 guys that look just like me for one line, like, hey man, what are you doing? Okay, thank you. And I'd be like, that's it.
But
I'm Chris Jericho. Like, I have a fan base, I have value. That's where that whole came from, because it's not easy auditioning.
No. Yeah. But I love it. There's something about it that I love. Yeah. Like, I don't know. There's just like, I love looking in that in the auditioner's face, you know, and then like trying to read them, they're trying to read you. It's such like a chess game, it kind of feels like, in a way. But obviously it's all in their hands.
they know what they want. They know what they want. The moment you walk in the door, if you're going to get it or not.
Right, right.
Because it's a lot of look and kind of attitude and vibe, right? But
I did that. I did a national commercial a couple years back. That was really great. And, you know, it's like, but it's such a high, man, going and chasing that, though, too.
When you get those gigs. It's fun, when you, it's like having a great match or having a shitty match. It's the highest of the high and the lowest of the lows.
Right. But I like, so I like writing, I like creating my own, you know, material. Like, mm-hmm. I'll do like writing, I'll throw like, you know, a monologue together that, you know, and it's just, it's wrestling. You know, a lot of it stems, you know, straight from wrestling.
Playing character.
It's the same thing. Yeah, playing character. I went out for the Mayans MC show recently, not too long ago. That was like something that I thought I was going to actually.
What show was it?
The Mayans MC. So they have Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
They're doing like a spinoff show.
Oh.
Mayans MC. It's called, what, you know,
yeah,
Clip Sutter.
The Mayan, the one Latino guy.
Yeah, yeah. So they just got, I guess they got greenlit. So, I mean, that's still a goal.
Did you think you're going to, you said you thought you'd get it?
Yeah, I thought I was going to. Dude, I did an audition with Juice helping me in a hotel room over here. And they were like, can you come in tomorrow? And I was like, nope, I'm on tour for 2 more weeks. And they were like, well, we guess that's
see
it.
See you later, buddy.
So, like, I mean, just like, I would love to. And I think what's cool about New Japan and where it's at, too, is like, if an opportunity like that came along, I could talk to Gato and Hattori and be like, this is a really big show. This is a great opportunity for me to walk away, you know, and then, you know, like we're talking about, like what you do, like you have done, you know, mm-hmm. you've taken your time and walked away for a little bit and then come back and then it's even cooler again, you know, so.
What's the thing I always liked about the Japanese style of running things is it's never, you know, 4 weeks out of the year, 4 days a week, and you go through your series, you know, your tour, you get 3 weeks here, then you get 3 weeks off. Mm-hmm. WWE will never do that, obviously, because of the weekly TV format, but gosh, it'd be so much better if they did.
Be nice, wouldn't it?
You know, so much better.
It's so nice to get that break for mm-hmm. 2 or 3 weeks and go home and just stretch your legs, not even think about, like, I mean, obviously, we do, some of us, we take indie bookings and stuff, you know, because now, you know, we're so popular. But,
do you do a lot of indie bookings in the States?
I try not to. Mm-hmm. I try not to. I'll just put some ridiculous price out there.
Yeah. Really?
No. But I have fun though. I mean, they are fun though, and that's kind of like because like now I'm in a managerial role a bit more, and I'm just kind of wrestling in, you know, random 6-mans and 8-mans that you know, I do get to do my stuff there though too, which mm-hmm. is good because I'll do a singles match more most likely, you know, and that's fun.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll go out there and people know you. I love when, you know, it's mm-hmm. cool. It's cool. But I would still rather be doing acting and some other stuff and working on the music and collaborating with people and doing writing and creating my own material. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really want to do.
Last question. What's your favorite match you ever had? Is the one that stands out more than the others? Or memorable ones?
You know what? I think right now, just because it's kind of fresh or, you know, it's recent, was Roppongi Vice versus the Young Bucks in Long Beach, because that was our last match. It was a really super emotional moment. We tore the house down. That was like probably the best match that we've ever had with the Young Bucks, and we've had some really good ones. But I think the ending of it all, me and Trent like going our separate ways and, you know, and literally on the verge of tears.
Yeah, it's real.
Because it was real, man. Yeah, it was 100% real. I think that's the one that really sticks out for me the most, yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, thanks for all your help in getting my visa and getting me here. And
dude, I was worried, bro.
Oh, dude, like, I've been to Japan 52 times. I've never had to get my own visa.
Dude, when you called me and said, dude, my visa hasn't showed up, I was like, oh, no. He was right.
I know. But I think it actually had at that point, but I hadn't. It was under, like, things at my house seemed to disappear quickly with the three kids running
around. You've got kids, man.
Yeah. But it worked out good, though. But, dude, let's do this. The next time Los Angeles... Sure. Talking shop, Tishes with the original OG crew.
All right.
It'll be a mess. It'll be a massacre.
Let's do it.
But
let me do an opening for it and like the producer opening. And
okay.
That, like, I'd like to make it cool.
And we're going
to
play your diss track now.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Play.
Diss your shiz, man. Get the album, rockandmirrormerch.com.
So what? Your podcast is better than mine. So what? You got wittier rhymes. So what? You go more than half an hour. So what? You got your own channel and all the power. So what? You got a list. You can put me down twice because I don't give up. So what? So what? So what? So what? So what? So what?
We used to be the hoots. We used to be the group. Podcast in 30 minutes and drink a few. Now you're kicking with Y2J. That's Y2 lame. What the hell's that? Olaboo.
We
used to be the hoots, we used to be the group. Podcast in 30 minutes and drink a few. Now you're kicking with Y2J, that's Y2 lame. What the hell's that, Ola Boo?
Yo, look for real though, Chris. Let me rejoin, let me join your podcast, yo. Look, I need this, man. I mean, I shouldn't have dissed you and the boys, Luke, Carl. I mean, I was just kidding, no? See, it's a joke. Yo, please return my phone calls, though. Or the emails. Or those Facebook messages. You know what? Just hit me up on Twitter, you know? @AzookaRock, in case you forgot. All right then.
All right, thanks to Rocky Romero. Remember, New Japan's G1 tournament coming to the Cow Palace in San Francisco on July 7th. Still tickets available at Ticketmaster.com. And don't forget Dominion in Osaka, Jericho versus Naito, June 9th from the Osaka Joe Hall. You can't watch it. It's sold out if you live in Japan, but you can watch it if you live around the world at NewJapanWorld.com. Go check it out and see the match that everyone is talking about. And also go check out the cruise that everyone's talking about. Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea. You can book your cabin at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And remember, when you come on the cruise, everything is all inclusive. You get to meet and greet, take pictures with Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Raven, a live podcast with Don Callis and Paul Azenby from Killing the Town. Keeper 100 will be there, Conan Disco Inferno, Shane Helms. Beyond the Darkness scaring the crap out of you with some scary tales. How about some great comedy? Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Craig Gass, Sal and Q from the Impractical Jokers. And what about the Rock and Roll? Fozzy will be there, Corey Taylor of Slipknot and Stone Sour, Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, King, The Dives, the Dave Spivak Project, Shoot the Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band, Blizzard of Ozzy, so much more going on. And don't forget the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament, matches happening in the middle of the ocean, and the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship title shot in the future. Kenny Omega will be there, the entire Bullet Club, the Young Bucks, Cody, Marty Scurll, Adam Page, everyone's going to be there. Briscoe Brothers, Christopher Daniels, Jay Lethal, Cheeseburger, and we got Kelly Klein, Brandi Rhodes, Mandy Leon, Brian Cage is going to be there, Melissa Santos is going to be there, Flip Gordon, Delirious, Kenny King, Silas Young, the Beer City Bruiser, the Dogs, everyone is going to be part of this cruise. I don't even know if we can add any more people. I think the ship is going to start to sink if we add any more talent. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book your cabin now. Don't you dare miss it. Make history and be a part of something that's very, very special, and it's going to be one of the greatest vacations of your life. And speaking of greatest, coming up Wednesday, one of my greatest friends, Paul Lazenby, the co-host of Killing the Town. He was a bouncer before he was a podcast host, before he was an MMA fighter. He's got great stories from his bouncer days because he's written two books called When We Were Bouncers with great stories from all the famous guys that were bouncers. Myself, Lance Storm, Ken Shamrock. Paul is telling us all the great stories about famous bouncers here on Wednesday. You're not going to want to miss this. Until then, in the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah!